CBSi in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Sophie Petter is the author of Revolution Française, The Quest to Reinvent a Nation. This is Emmanuel Macron's political biography. We've spent moments with his childhood and his beloved drama teacher who becomes his beloved wife, the First Lady of France now. But it's important to identify where he learns politics and how he interprets that today. He founds a party in April of 2016 called En Marche, On the Move. And he founds it by going back to Amiens. And there's a moment that it's clear in Sophie's book, nobody's quite inspired by why he goes to Amiens. He has no relationship with it. Well, he left Amiens when he was 17 years old, I believe, and went off to finish his school, his bac, in Paris. But then he was interested in becoming a litterateur, not a politician whatsoever. And Sophie, this is another one of those moments where you speculate in the book, he could have been the novelist that he wants to be. He's written three novels that he won't show to anybody but Brigitte. He's extremely well-educated in French literature and international literature. But he fails to get into the school where all the literary superstars of France go. Instead, he gets into Sciences Po. What is Sciences Po to the French?
Humanities university, which is, very selective and is seen as a stepping stone to moving on to a sort of postgraduate, you know, top postgraduate schools in France. So Paris-based, quite elite, very selective and a stepping stone to certainly to political life as well as many other things.
He had a year prepping and he took the test to be a literary man twice and failed it, but he gets into Sciences Po. He's a prodigiously gifted reader. He goes very fast and you emphasize how he learns fast. What does he remember about Sciences Po that directed him into politics? Does he have a moment at that or was that later?
I don't think that his political path was set out at that point. I think, again, there are some people who trace his political ambitions right to the very beginning and, even further back. For me, I think it's more that he knew he had options and he wanted to make the most of those. And he knew that he wanted to give himself the possibility of having a political career. But at the time, that isn't what anyone immediately thought he was going to do. He went to the civil service elite training college, which is, again, even more selective, went on from there to the finance ministry, and then from there to an investment bank. So I think in some respects, people thought that this was somebody who's making their career in the private sector. He was making money. He was doing deals. He had a pretty good private sector career ahead of him. But again, at what point did he really realize that politics was what he wanted to do? I think it's difficult to identify one absolute moment in his career that does that or that symbolizes that.
You tell us that Napoleon liked to ask his generals, are you lucky? And I would say that if Napoleon and Macron had a conversation, that would be the question that the emperor would address to the president. Are you lucky? The answer is yes, because he takes a double degree at ENA and at the University of Nanterre, which you remind all of us. I didn't know this, Sophie. It's a pleasure to learn where May 68 came from. It came from the University of Nanterre. But you don't just get politics from a school with a reputation of revolution. Who is Paul Ricoeur to the president of France?
Well, he's a philosopher, a very well-known French philosopher, and he was a teacher at Nanterre during the 1968 student uprising. And he became a sort of, it might be overstating to say mentor, but from Emmanuel Macron managed to become a research assistant to him. And this, I think, was absolutely crucial to his, an understanding of philosophy, to his ambitions to, you know, perhaps make a career in that field. It's difficult now to imagine that you might have ended up with a philosopher rather than as a politician. But it was this relationship was, again, Macron's entire life, I think, has been influenced by certain figures, often a lot older than him, and they have acted almost as sort of surrogate fathers to him, I think. And his relationship with Paul Ricoeur wasn't that close in terms of emotional involvement, but in terms of intellectual involvement, I think it gave Macron the chance to, you know, participate in philosophical debate and in the writing of one of Ricoeur's books that he was a research assistant for. That I think, you know, again, these were sort of seminal moments for Macron, but they didn't end up being career defining.
This is the left. This is the French intellectual left we're addressing right now, and there are other names that Sophie introduces for the influencing of the young Emmanuel Macron. John Rawls, whose 1971 book talked about distributive justice. Amartya Sen, the Indian philosopher about liberty and equality. But I come to the fun part of Macronism. What is Macronism? It's a French phrase that means at the same time. And they eventually got to make fun of him because he would always be saying at the same time, which in American talk, I think Sophie means on the one hand and on the other hand, at the same time, at the same time. What does that tell us about Macronism, that he populates his book with his speeches with at the same time, reversing himself from what he just said?
Well, of course, you know, it's very easy to mock and to caricature because, I mean, everything ultimately can be both on the one hand and on the other. And it can lead to it becoming either nonsensical or illogical or meaning nothing at all. I think that when you're trying to work out what it is he believes in and what it is he's trying to do, even as president, sometimes well and sometimes not so well, you can often see this attempt to be balancing one thing with something else. I mean, this is part of, again, who he is. It's part of the way he thinks. And all of those intellectual references that you just reminded us of, a lot of those are about sort of emancipation, about investing in social capital, about trying to help people use education in order to take opportunities, and Macron believes very strongly on that. At the same time, because that's the phrase that he uses, at the same time, you know, he wants to free up business. He wants a sort of more classically, liberal, perhaps in the classical sense, you know, let enterprise cut taxes, let enterprise like businesses, entrepreneurs get on with creating wealth. And you have this sort of balance between wanting to invest in the kind of social policy on the one hand and invest in a sort of liberal economic policy on the other, which I think is part of what Macron's tried to do. And absolutely, you know, it makes him very difficult to classify. You know, he's not on the left and he's not on the right, and he doesn't believe in those labels anyway. But it's, it means he tries to end up pleasing both sides of the political spectrum and sometimes end up pleasing none of them, because people feel that they're sort of eternally dissatisfied with what he's trying to do. But it all goes back to what you were asking about, and that's this sort of on the one hand and on the other.
He comes out of ENA, and he gets a plus job because he's number five in his class in finance with the French presidency. So he's introduced to the center of the center. He marries Bridget in 2007. He's a man on the go. And then in 2008, he makes the decision to join Rothschilds, which is why he gets a reputation among the politicians as the banker. What does that time at Rothschilds, in which he did very well, making a deal that made him €1 million, you're reporting here, what did he learn? What does he remember from being a banker?
Well, I think it's, you know, those who had identified Macron as being a future politician saw it as a time when he was making contacts and he was making some money for himself so that he wouldn't have to rely on others. And I think that that is what comes away from talking to people, as I did, who worked with him at the time, that he didn't want to be beholden to anybody. This is somebody who wants to be his own person. He doesn't want to be in anyone's debt, and that part of, you know, the earning of the money was to make sure that he could lead the life he wanted to lead without having to be owned or owe anybody. And I think that that as much as the contacts that he made, as much as the, reputation that he was beginning to earn for himself, that is what comes away, what I come away with from those years he spent at Rothschild's Investment Bank.
He rejoins the political life because he's introduced a mutual friend, a senior, a mentor friend, a diplomat, to François Hollande, who will become president of France, and invite the young Emmanuel Macron into what we call an American administration, into the palace, in finances, always the finance ministry. But strikingly, these many years later, Hollande remembers Macron unhappily. Why so?
Well, ultimately, because Macron betrayed François Hollande. You know, this is a guy who joined François Hollande's team when nobody believed that Hollande was capable of winning that election. That he then went to work for him and did a great job at the Élysée Palace. So, to the extent that Hollande then promoted him to become economy minister, that propelled him into the public eye. Don't forget, nobody really knew him when he was just an advisor, but there he was. Hollande had set him off, given him a public position in government, and that was when Macron really began to sort of become a household name in France. Well, you know, it was then, while Hollande was still president, that Macron decided, having occupied this job for a couple of years, that he was going to set up this instance or this organization, whatever, we didn't know what it was, this thing called En Marche. It wasn't really a political party, but, you know, with retrospect, it was very clearly the first step on the way to Macron running for the presidency, which he ultimately did. He quit government, and having said to Hollande, you know, this is just a think tank, this is just a sort of, this isn't a political party, it's just a movement, he then turned it into a vehicle for running for the presidency, and in doing so made it absolutely impossible for François Hollande to run himself. There wasn't the space for him to do it. So I think in that respect, you know, Hollande was his mentor, and then Macron turned and ran against him.
The decision to form En Marche, on the go, on the move, philosopher on the move, is April of 2016. And the significance there is that he founds it at Amiens, even though he has no intimate relationship with the city anymore. I believe his father lives there, but most of his family has moved away. His two siblings, his sister and his brother, are no longer there, I believe. But what's important is a year later in the presidential contest, and when we come back, a critical revelation of Macronism takes place in the contest with Marine Le Pen in the spring of 2017. Given that we're looking at perhaps a restaging of that contest, this is Back to the Future. The book is Revolution Française. Sophie Petter is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.